Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, for 5 months now, the Israeli regime has been pounding the Gaza Strip by their gunships, drones, fighter jets, hitting civilians at will. They've used phosphorus bombs, snipers, and ground troops, and are even testing out new weapons on the people of Gaza. Despite all of this, they have not been able to break the will of the Palestinian people. So now they've increased the use of their latest weapon, and that is starvation. They are starving the kids of Gaza to death and depriving them of water, too. This as the death toll continues to rise and now stands at over 30,500 people as the international community continues to debate whether a ceasefire will be implemented soon or not. To help me look at all of this, I'd like to welcome my guests to the spotlight. Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway, Oslo. And Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Berkeley. Well, thank you both for being with me. I'm going to start off in Oslo. And Glenn, I'm going to read a partial definition of war crimes as declared by the United Nations. Murder, mutilation, cruel treatment and torture, taking of hostages, intentionally directing attacks against the civilian population, intentionally directing attacks against buildings dedicated to religion, education, art, science, or charitable purposes, historical monuments, or hospital. I mean, is there even one of these that the Israeli regime has not committed in Gaza?
Well, I think this began with, as you mentioned, military strikes against the civilian population. But what we see now is taking it to a whole new level, because this is actually blockade on aid. And it's all in the open in front of the camera. So you see Israelis blocking and preventing aid trucks from entering, very much for the explicit purpose of denying food for the civilian population in Gaza. So it is a deliberate man-made famine, which we are about to now see unravel completely. And even when some food has been able to get through, we see that the Israel army actually opens fire on civilians attempting to get some access to this food. And of course, we have the somewhat absurd scenario where the U.S. Airdrops aid in, you know, seemingly heroic effort, but this is a very strange U.S. position. It's very expensive to airdrop food, and it's also very little. Again, this is the American weapons being supplied to Israel, which are used to deny food to the civilians, and at the same time, they're airdropping food in because the Americans claim they're not able to get food in otherwise because the people they're arming are preventing them from delivering the aid. So it's very hard to see if this is weakness on behalf of the U.S. government or if it's just crocodile tears that, you know, allowing them to support the starvation of Palestinians while at the same time trying to distance themselves from it. Either way, it's obviously a humanitarian catastrophe.
Interesting point you just made, Glenn. What about that, Rick? Thinking about the Americans and dropping food there, food boxes, on the one hand, they could just stop supporting the regime, and of course they encourage it every day and are supporting it. On the other hand, many say that it's also a part of the psychological warfare, just to have these Palestinians torturing them more and running after food. I mean, your assessment of why they would even do this like they are.
I think it is to public relations, to give the image that they're concerned about the Palestinians, the plight in Gaza, when in reality they could stop it in a few days. But if the Biden was to pick up the phone and call Netanyahu and says it has to come to an immediate end. Of course, the U.S. in the past has done that on a few occasions. President Eisenhower did it in 1956, and Ronald Reagan actually did it in 1982 when Israel finally, after a, you know, extended period of time after they massacred so many people at Sabra and Shatila. But, you know, the bottom line is that the Western governments are backing Israel. It's not just the U.S. The U.K. and Germany are also complicit. And they are a big reason that this has continued. Where we're at right now is, according to the United Nations, 576,000 people in Gaza, a quarter of the population, are facing death by starvation. Not only that, Israel has compounded the crisis by a few weeks ago, they killed the head of security for Hamas, who was protecting and making sure that aid was going in, was being distributed in a reasonable manner and a fair manner. So Israel has disabled it. They basically created the situation where there's chaos in some situations, because you've got people who are starving, and the organizations that have been so successful in administering aid in a fair and proportionate way, like UNRWA and the World Food Program, have been prevented by Israel from doing their job.
Well, Glenn, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Right to Food has said that using food as a tool of war and denying food is a war crime. With this being said, and all that has taken place in front of the eyes of the world in real time, your perspective of what more evidence does the international community need to stop this genocide?
Well, it's hard to say what more evidence is needed. All of this is happening in front of the cameras. And again, the ICJ ruled that this was a plausible scenario of a genocide. And it explicitly gave a call for Israel to halt any potential acts of genocide. Now, as we now see very correctly, as just mentioned, there's a lot of countries who are backing Israel in doing this, and not just the United States. We even see countries like Germany was increased its support for Israel. So we even saw now recently Nicaragua trying to take Germany to the ICJ for being complicit in genocide. And this is, you know, it's not hyperbolic. This is the ICJ has ruled, and the countries still supporting it are now making themselves complicit. And so, I just don't see what evidence is required now. There's been deliberate attack on civilian infrastructure, so the Palestinians would not have anything to come back to, so they would leave. And again, the intentions about ethnic cleansing, at least, is also very, very explicit. They're trying to make deals in order to get the Palestinians to go to other countries. And this is what's happening, making the Gaza unlivable for Palestinians. And this is effectively the next step, not just destroying hospitals and civilian infrastructure, but now also creating a humanitarian crisis through starvation so horrific that the Palestinians would be ethnically cleansed or relocated somewhere else.
Well, as I said at the beginning, it seems that there is no crime that the regime hasn't committed. And even the dead have not been immune to Israeli crimes. Today we saw the Zionist regime bombing a mass grave and body parts being strewn in northern Gaza. I mean, what does this mean, Rick? It's so mind-boggling. I mean, why hasn't the Zionist regime been stopped, and why haven't there been arrest warrants issued for its leaders?
Well, it's in short because the West still has the amount of control that they do, unfortunately. They're able to commit war crimes in plain view and get away with it. I think the time is limited that they're going to be able to do that, because more and more of the world, especially in the global south, is recognizing the hypocrisy and in this case the genocide that's taking place under the watch of the West, and specifically the U.S., which of course has the most influence on Israel. Israel's dependent on U.S. Funding, military and economic support, $3.8 billion every year, and now they're trying to get $14 billion extra right now. So I think the crisis that has emerged out of Gaza since October 7 is having a pivotal effect on perceptions around the world. As was remarked earlier, the filing of charges at the ICJ by Nicaragua against Germany for collaborating in genocide. You know, these are measures that hopefully are going to bear fruit, and more people are going to see the reality and demand change. We're at a critical point in history right now where Israel is committing these crimes in plain view, as Professor Deason was saying.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Glenn, why does the collective West support this genocide?
I think it's just a traditional support for Israel. It's always, been this way. But of course, on the 7th of October, a lot of Western governments were justifiably outraged by the attacks by Hamas, and they then gave their unconditional support for Israel. And I think that many did not know what they signed up for, because when Israel obviously were not only after retaliation or getting Hamas, but seeking to solve the so-called the Palestinian problem, I think many simply just kept their current position.
Let me just jump in here, Glenn, because you said they were outraged at the situation, what happened on October 7th. How come they weren't outraged 75 years, the 75 years of oppression that the Palestinian people have seen, that they have been displaced? And of course, the collective West, of course, was responsible for this to begin with in the creating of the Zionist entity. How come they weren't outraged up until that time that the Palestinian people have been being killed just continuously, at least since 1948, but of course even before?
Well, no, I'm not making any excuses for this. Since the 7th of October, I just want to say there's been an incrementalism. But of course, you're very correct about this. And this is one of the problem which the West faces now. I mean, the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, he recently made the statement that that the global South now looked at the West in terms of being hypocritical, applying double standards. Well, this obviously appears to be one of the greatest understatements. What we're watching is a complete moral collapse. On one hand, we see, for example, the EU lecturing other countries about human rights, and now also backing effectively a genocide. So this is quite shocking. And I think what is forcing, hopefully, change would be what you can call people power, because as all these images appear on the screen, you see more and more people distancing themselves from their own governments. And I think this is the kind of pressure that's needed, because so far, a lot of the governments are simply completely devoted to Israel, and you know, through these slogans of right to self-defense and all.
Well, Rick, the Palestinian representative to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, addressing the UN, said that the international community has accepted the dehumanization of Palestinians. He said they allowed Israel to destroy Palestinian homes, displace the people, dispossess them, then wound them and kill them, all while looking the other way. And this impunity over the years has led to the genocide we are witnessing today in Gaza. Your thoughts on his comments?
I think they're very accurate. This has been going on for a long time, as you were pointing out. This is last fall was the 75th anniversary of the Nakba. At the United Nations, there have been various good attempts to change the situation. There was the right of return, Resolution 194, which Israel when it joined the UN, it agreed to. And yet there's been this impunity, as you say, as you correctly say, that's gone on. And the people in Gaza have been, meanwhile, been suffering ever since 1967, and especially since 2007. In the late 1990s, the Israeli journalist Amira Haas wrote a book called Drinking the Sea at Gaza, Days and Nights in a Land Under Siege. So that's just an indication of how long this has been going on to, but it's at a totally new level now, where you've got blanket bombing of the tiny global, the tiny Gaza Strip. Most people don't realize how small it is. But you've got blanket bombing. You've got Israel preventing the supply of medicines, of water, of food, and other forms of aid, of energy. It's at a whole new level now, and I think this is going to be a wake up call. This is a wake up call that. And it's a pivotal moment in history where the whole world can see what the reality is, as opposed to the mythology.
Well, Glenn, looking at the current situation, would you say that all countries which have played a part in creating and supporting the Israeli regime are all responsible for the current genocide or not?
Well, I'm always hesitant about collective guilt, but in terms of countries who have been backing this for so long, I think this, seeing what's happening now, I think it's important to recognize this did not come out of nowhere. This has been going on for so many decades, and I think there's been also this effort of denouncing any resistance to occupation as terrorism. Now, obviously, when there's attack on civilians, it always falls in the category of terrorism, which should not, should of course be condemned. But no one has really defined a clear role for Palestinians. So, well, what has been the position for Palestinians who've been living under occupation, or who has been facing ethnic cleansing? No one has ever spoken about their right for self-defense, which has always been implicit that they can either live under occupation or face or be called terrorists and face repercussions. So I think, to a large extent, there is a lot of collective guilt going around that we have allowed this to go so far. And effectively, I think there's a lot of dishonesty as well, because people still talk about the two-state solutions, even when the Israelis are very openly saying they will not allow this to happen. So there is, I think a lot of crocodile tears and hypocrisy and collective guilt obviously going all around.
Rick, so at the end of the day, does it mean that there is no international community nor international law to protect Palestinian kids?
That's what it looks like. There's law, and the International Court of Justice hopefully is going to stiffen their call that they issued a month ago. We're waiting to see what Israel responds, because they were instructed or ordered to provide a report within 30 days, and that time is up. So we're waiting to see what happens. The good thing is that Israel's impunity, Israel's crimes against humanity, and the false charges of anti-Semitism are more and more seen around the world, and even in the United States. Growing numbers of people are speaking out against this. They're not only speaking out against Israeli policy, they're speaking out against Washington's policy. We had a big demonstration in San Francisco yesterday. People were denouncing the Israeli attacks on Gaza and the looming invasion of Rafah. That's just a sign of how much things have changed in the last, since October 7.
Mm-hmm. Well, Glenn, do you think the past 5 months have reiterated the importance of countries to be independent and militarily strong, because there is no law that will save them, and unfortunate reality of this world is that might makes right?
Well, this is the so-called international anarchy. Any state who wants to be, or any people who want to be secure would have to effectively be able to protect themselves. Ideally, we should aspire to have some kind of an international community which reduces the dependence on having a hard power to ensure one's survival. But again, I think I can't really think of any better example than Palestine at the moment to see just such a glaring failure of the international community. And I think it's unique for many reasons. You asked before as well, and I think that at least in Europe, this idea that you have to pick a side, and nobody wants to go against Israel, especially because of our history in Europe, given the Holocaust, or in the way, not just by the Germans, but how the Europeans largely ignored the suffering of the Jews back then. But of course, this is it becomes very grotesque to use this as a justification for what's now becoming a genocide or has become a genocide against the Palestinians. Also, I don't even think that this should be framed as picking a side. I don't think this is even Israel's interest. I think Israel will suffer greatly from this. They're isolating themselves, and it will. I think they're on the path to suicide if they continue like this. So I don't think anyone gains from this. This is horrific for the Palestinians. This is could be a suicide decision for the Israelis, and of course, possibility of regional war and global instability. This is an overall disaster for everyone, the way I would see it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Europeans, some of them feel that it's hard for them to pick a side because, of course, this is a Holocaust in itself. Well, Rick, would you say the reality of this genocide has been the biggest recruiter for the Palestinian resistance, since people have realized that there is no choice for them but to resist?
Mm-hmm. It's certainly been a huge wake-up call, and a lot of people who were unaware of the situation in Gaza were unaware of a Palestine 8 months ago, are aware of it now. And they're not only aware of it, but they're speaking out, they're putting pressure on their congressional representatives. There's all sorts of actions happening every day in the United States, confronting politicians, confronting media. That's the good thing that's happened, but it's of course at a tremendous price. The Air Force Airman Aaron Bushnell, of course, who took the extreme act of taking his own life. I think there's widespread respect for him, for what he did, and that's just another marker about, you know, how much things have changed and how awareness of Palestine. And, you know, it's in a way Palestine is symbolic because they're oppressed people, there are starving people, there are people like that all around the world, and this is just one extreme case. And I think we are going to see a shift of where the hypocrisy of the so-called Western rules-based order is going to be openly defied and challenged, and hopefully we can see some much better things ahead. I think the Nicaraguan application at the ICJ, South Africa's application to the ICJ, these are indicators of how much things have changed.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo, and Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 7th, 8th, and 9th verses of chapter Naml.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. إِذْ قَالَ مُوسَى لِأَهْلِهِ إِنِّي آنَسْتُ نَارًا سَآتِيكُم مِّنْهَا بِخَبَرٍ أَوْ آتِيكُم بِشِهَابٍ قَبَسٍ لَّعَلَّكُمْ تَصْطَلُونَ.
Mention when Moses said to his family, "Indeed, I have perceived a fire. I will bring you from there information, or will bring you a burning torch that you may warm yourselves."
فَلَمَّا جَاءَهَا نُودِيَ أَن بُورِكَ مَن فِي النَّارِ وَمَن حَوْلَهَا وَسُبْحَانَ اللَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ.
But when he came to it, he was called, "Blessed is whoever is at the fire and whoever is around it, and exalted is Allah, Lord of the worlds."
Ya Musa, innahu ana Allahul Azizul Hakim.
O Moses, indeed it is I, Allah, the Exalted in Might, the Wise.
So as we said, Moses, in that very difficult and challenging situation, he decided to leave his family behind to go and search for that fire that he saw from afar. Now, he said to his family that I am leaving you here only because I need to get you some news or a firebrand that you may warm yourselves. He left his family and this event happened. He became closer to that light of flame and he heard a voice. Blessed is he, whoever is in the fire and whoever is about it. Now, in the previous episode, we thoroughly discussed the possible meanings and examples of the one whoever is in the fire and whoever is about it. Now, the meaning is, in fact, clear. But the point is that the voice that was heard addressed Moses and said, "Glory be to Allah, the Lord of the worlds." So this means that the Lord of the world is free from any defect in materiality. But again, another voice was heard addressing Moses, says, "Ya Musa, O Moses, innahu anal azizul hakim. O Moses, verily I am Allah, the mighty, the wise." This sentence was for the sake that no doubt might remain in Moses' mind, and he would know that if it was anything or anyone, it was just the Lord of the worlds who was speaking with him. Not the flaming brand, not the tree, not the angels, but the Lord of the world who does not fail, who is mighty, who is the possessor of wisdom and device.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine.
In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
حفظ الكتاب بصدره فبدا وضيئا كالنجوم تألقا وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
This meaning that we mentioned, dear listeners, is a premise for the statement of the miracle, which will be referred to in the next holy verse. Since miracle originates from two attributes of Allah, as we know, His power and at the same time His wisdom. However, before discussing about the next verse, this question arises here, and it is this, that how did Moses understand and was assured that this voice was Allah's and not other than that? In answer to this question, it can be said that this voice being accompanied with a clear miracle, which is a glittering fire from inside the branch of a green tree, was a manifest reason that it was a divine matter. Moreover, as we will find out by the next verse, after this voice, Moses was ordered a command which contained the miracles of rod and white hand, and these two miracles were two other evidences for the reality of this voice. And if not these, besides all of them, principally, the divine voice must have a particular quality which makes it separate from any other voice. And when one hears it, it affects on his heart so deeply that he never doubts that it is the voice of Allah. So, the next two verses discuss the two miracles that were given to Moses. We'll discuss them in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
July 12, 1983. Place Hosseinia Jamaran, Tehran. Subject: Spiritual Purification and Focus on Spirituality. It has been quoted from Sayyid ibn Tawus, may Allah be pleased with him, that when he reached the age of adolescence and was given permission to worship the Blessed and Almighty Allah, he celebrated the event. If it were not for the commandment of the Blessed and Almighty Allah, I do not know how we would have gathered the courage to eulogize Allah and praise Him. You see, the daily mandatory prayers that are placed at the top of all worship, how is its circumstance? It begins with takbir, or expression of glorification of Allah, and it ends with repeating it thrice.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. This is the Spring of the Truth, and I am Bita, the host of today's episode. We're going to start with this sentence from Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its revolution. This natural, superficial appearance is the least valuable sight of human beings, either man or woman. But moving towards perfection starts from this point. Human beings are transformable and movable creatures who can elevate themselves from mere nature to divine position. As we say, the focus of this sentence is on the perfection and the evolutionary adventure and way towards the perfection. As you know, we talked about the nature of humankind, that there are both bad and good parts in the soul of every humankind. A man or a person that is actually fighting over the bad things and bad desires of his soul is going through the right path. But still, education is another factor for these people in order to make their souls perfect, make their souls stronger.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi.
صلى الله عليه
صل يا
رسول الله
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله.
In Islam, ethical teachings are also political ones. And there are so many things to talk about this issue that I mentioned for you. But the point is, we are no different than beasts without spirituality. Living in a materialistic world shouldn't let you be crushed in the ocean of false information and false ideas and a school of thoughts. Don't forget that one of the important emphasis of Imam was that you shouldn't look and think highly of Western countries. And unfortunately, this mindset of nihilism and feeling empty and depression and the form of philosophy which is detrimental to the beliefs, specifically to the religious beliefs in Islam and our youth, is from Western countries. So according to what Imam told us, we shouldn't think highly of them because every beautiful thing that is transmitted by these people to us is only an empty, beautiful cover, which is not going to fulfill the true desire of our soul, and it cannot nourish our soul enough in order to go through the path towards Allah Almighty.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A series of restrictions were imposed on the Yemeni economy following the U.S. redesignation of the Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group earlier this year. This blacklisting has had an impact on the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country, where millions of people are in dire need of aid.
Ansarullah as a political component has no external economic relations or companies in the private sector that have real weight in the national economy. The real goal of the resolution is to blackmail Ansarullah and distort their position in support of Gaza. The Yemeni economy has been in a state of siege for 9 years, and therefore the American measures putting pressure on the local economy we believe will not have much effect, especially since the Yemeni economy has withstood pressure over the past years and adapted to the measures imposed by the exiled Yemeni government in Riyadh. The Central Bank of Yemen will also work to impose procedures to secure the transfer of foreign exchange to and from Yemen.
Several international companies, including the money transfer company Western Union, have suspended their activities in Yemen, severely affecting the livelihoods of most Yemenis who rely on financial support from relatives abroad. Experts predict that such actions will lead to the creation of a black market for those benefiting from the suspension of money transfers.
The United States of America imposed collective punishment on the Yemeni people. Very important financial channels were stopped, such as Western Union, which is one of the most important money transfer networks in the world, and through it, Yemeni expatriates in American and European countries used to send money to their families in Yemen easily. We have 6 million expatriates outside the country and thousands of Yemeni families depend on them to provide a living. You can imagine what the situation will become after these financial transfers stop. The beneficiaries of this measure are black market workers who exploit these circumstances by deducing a percentage of their remittances and transfer them through illegal channels.
In an effort to deter Yemen's naval operations against vessels linked to the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, the U.S. Department of State blacklisted the Ansarullah movement as a specially designated global terrorist group. However, this designation has primarily affected the humanitarian situation, as members of the Ansarullah movement have no investments abroad.
Observers believe that Washington's recent measures are aimed at inciting the Yemeni people to take to the streets in opposition to the Ansarullah movement as a strategic move to undermine the group's popularity in the country. But that plot does not look like it will succeed, given the widespread support for Ansarullah in Yemen.
It was the second occasion on which Pakistani lawmakers elected Shehbaz Sharif as the new premier of the country. Shehbaz Sharif assumed office as Pakistan's prime minister for the first time in April 2022, following the dramatic ouster of Pakistan's jailed ex-prime minister Imran Khan from power through a parliamentary no-confidence vote. Sharif, the younger brother of Pakistan's three-time Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, secured 201 votes in the lower house of the parliament. He emerged victorious over his rival Umar Ayub Khan of the PTI party led by jailed ex-PM Khan, who managed to secure 92 votes. A candidate needs a simple majority of votes in the 336-member house to win the post.
From the deepest core of my heart, I thank those who with their votes and love elected me as the leader of this house. People have been given a split mandate in the general elections, and those having reservations about election results need to approach the appropriate forums. We have no personal egos, and the other side also needs to follow the suit for the sake of Pakistan.
The election of the new Pakistani premier was marred by nationwide protests by the supporters of imprisoned Imran Khan against alleged rigging in the recently held elections. Several party workers who were staging protest demonstrations against results manipulation in the recently held elections were arrested.
I'm here to request Election Commission of Pakistan, the Judiciary of Pakistan and Chief Secretary of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa to take strict action against the ROs, the DROs, who not only violated the Election Act and election rules and oath of their offices, but also violated Constitution of Pakistan, in which preamble states that the people of Pakistan will decide the fate of their representatives through ballot.
The newly elected Premier Sharif, who is expected to take the oath of the office on Monday, has been congratulated by several neighboring countries, including China, Iran, and Turkey.
As Shehbaz Sharif assumes the role of Prime Minister for a second time, he is pitted against a multitude of challenges. These include fragile economic and political conditions. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
South Korean doctors rallied Sunday, threatening to go on strike following the government's decision to increase the quota for incoming medical students from about 3,000 to 5,000. Doctors say the measures will not necessarily alleviate the shortage of physicians in less desirable specialties and locations.
In essential medical care, the conditions are relatively poor and there are legal burdens such as frequent criminal lawsuits compared to non-essential medical care. It cannot be said with certainty that the increased number of doctors will flow into essential medical care and rural medical care.
Triggered by the government plan, 9,000 resident doctors in training out of 13,000 across the country walked out on February 20th. Patients have been scrambling for care with hospitals understaffed.
The government wants to win the general election by winning votes from the people, and that is why it is ultimately implementing populist policies without making a scientific or rational decision and without any preparation.
Polls suggest the South Korean public largely supports the government, and President Yoon Suk-yeol has seen his approval ratings increase since the standoff with doctors emerged.
The government has filed criminal complaints against the leaders of the Korea Medical Association who organized this rally. Doctors who failed to comply with the back-to-work order face the suspension of their licenses, fines, and potential jail sentences. Both sides appear to be digging in.
Medical schools don't have the capacity to accommodate so many new students, say some administrators. National Assembly elections are scheduled for April 10th. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Italian cities were the scene of rallies in solidarity with Gaza and in condemnation of Israel's inhuman attacks against Palestinian civilians. Rome, Florence, Pisa, Syracuse, Grosseto. For the umpteenth time since early October, tens of thousands of people across Italy took to the streets of the respective cities to express their anger at the Italian government for unconditionally supporting the Israeli regime and at the international community for its complicity in Gaza genocide.
Ad oggi, ma anche in passato.
Today, more than ever, international law is just an abstract set of norms which prevails over humanity. Millions of people have died since the Sykes-Picot Accord over 100 years ago, and we're still arguing over the fact that Palestine is a state or not.
We'll go down in history as those who silently supported the genocide period.
Italy has not condemned Israel for the killing of unarmed Palestinians collecting aid in Gaza in an attack that killed more than 100 people on Thursday. However, Rome has called on the Israeli regime to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators behind the aid massacre to justice.
The Italian police crackdown on students during Palestine solidarity demonstrations in the past weeks has sparked outrage across Italy. Student collectives are at loggerheads with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and police over the rise in attacks against students.
The government and police repression has revealed the bare truth. Our country is a democracy only on paper. Ours are simply the democracies of double standards and deception. We have been attacked during our protest for peace in Ukraine, and we are attacked today. We perfectly know how democracies work in Western countries.
Thousands of artists, curators and critics have signed an open letter calling on the Venice Biennale, one of the world's largest contemporary visual art exhibitions, to exclude the Israeli National Pavilion from this year's art exhibition due to the brutal assaults against the civilians in Gaza. However, Italy's culture minister has firmly backed Israel's participation. Max Civili, Rome.
Across France, supporters of Palestine marched to denounce Israel's constant atrocities and war crimes during their latest invasion of Gaza. The world has been stunned by what's been dubbed the Flower Massacre, the death of over 100 Palestinians and the wounding of nearly 800 others after Israeli troops opened fire on civilians waiting for food.
We are here to ask for sanctions and to expose the hypocrisy of those who say they were shocked by the killing of people starving that were getting humanitarian aid, but at the same time don't do anything to stop the genocide.
Some 600,000 people in Gaza, or 25% of the population, are currently at risk of famine.
The French Foreign Ministry said the shootings were unjustifiable and backed a call for an independent investigation by the United Nations. French President Emmanuel Macron demanded truth, justice, respect for international law, and called for an immediate ceasefire.
In the Western world, which is and remains accomplice with the Israeli genocide, but a slight change in the tone of all those Western leaders, including Emmanuel Macron. Remember that a few months ago, Macron was proposing a military coalition to fight the Palestinian resistance in Gaza.
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two.
Il a deux visages.
Macron is two-faced. It is only since the International Criminal Court announced that they would investigate Israel that Macron began to say just a few words which were not in total support of Israel. He continues to give arms to Israel and is as complicit as the leaders in Tel Aviv.
Many marchers carried signs of deceased United States soldier Aaron Bushnell, who set himself on fire at the Israeli embassy in Washington after declaring that he will no longer be complicit in genocide. After the start of Israel's invasion of Gaza, France imposed a nationwide ban on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around the country. Activists were forced to endure mass arrests, a record number of fines, and the infamous brutality of France's police. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Once a boomtown of the Industrial Revolution, Rochdale in northwest England has been reliably labor for years. Until now. This was an election that saw allegations of fraud, desperate attempts like this one by the right-wing Reform Party.
Make sure you prevent George Galloway from being your MP for Rochdale.
And dominated by the massacre in Gaza.
From the river to the sea.
The result came hours after polls closed.
Hereby declare that George Galloway is duly elected.
A sweeping victory for a veteran anti-war pro-Palestine campaigner who reminded everyone that the anger in Britain over the Gaza genocide is not confined to the Muslim community only.
Every Muslim is bitterly angry at Keir Starmer and his misnamed Labour Party. But you would be very foolish if you did not realize that millions of other citizens of our country are.
Rochdale is home to a 30,000-strong Muslim community.
George Galloway for Rochdale.
Apart from bread-and-butter issues such as the declining public services, unemployment, poverty and crime that have racked the constituency for years, for the majority of the voters here, there was more to take into account.
This as a blessing to basically take our word straight to Parliament, and if one person just goes in there and asks for a ceasefire, asks for all these genocide to stop, it's more than any Labour candidate or Labour MP or anyone has done for many years.
He can bring change to us locally, but also nationally and internationally. So the thing is, the ongoing issue with Gaza is a big issue, and it's an international issue. But at the same time, it's not just a Muslim issue. It's about human rights.
The election was triggered by the death in January of opposition Labour Party MP Tony Lloyd. He was replaced by this man, Azhar Ali. On voting day, though, Labour's campaign centre lay shuttered after the party abandoned Ali for making anti-Israel remarks.
By-elections don't always represent the wider national picture. They are protest votes with a local focus. Last time around, Labour won the seat here by 10,000 votes, but this time they lost. And perhaps that is a sign of what's to come, both for Labour and the Conservatives, with the general elections only months away. Saeed Puriza, Rochdale, Greater Manchester.
On Thursday, a demonstration was staged in Rome's Parliament Square in protest against the arrest of Anan Yaish, a 37-year-old Palestinian citizen from Tul Kaum in the West Bank. Anan was arrested without charge or justifiable cause by the Italian police in the central Italy mountain city of L'Aquila on January 29 on an extradition request by the Israeli government, which Italy's justice ministry acquiesced straight away. A month later, Anan, who holds a valid residence permit in Italy since 2017, is still detained in a prison wing housing only terrorists in the city of Terni.
Anan's detention is similar to Israel's administrative detention, when a person is kept in prison without trial, without having committed an offence. Israel even wants to intimidate the Palestinians who live abroad.
Israel believes Anan has committed one and only very serious offence. He has not given up the fight. That's why they are behind him. Italy is surveillance subservient as usual with Israel. Our authorities have arrested an innocent man who is just a member of the Palestinian resistance.
During the demonstration, activists strongly condemned Italy's government for its complicity in the genocide in Gaza.
We know full well how heavy Israel's influence is on the Italian government. Prime Minister Meloni wanted to ban pro-Palestine demonstrations. We have seen her going hand-in-hand with Netanyahu.
More pro-Palestine protests will be held in Italy at the weekend. Large demonstrations will take place in Rome, Florence and Pisa. Meanwhile, a group of Italian lawmakers announced they will